Good afternoon. It is 1:31. My name is Jeff Petrillo, and I am serving as acting chair for the Washington County Planning Commission. Commissioner Vile is unavailable today. One second, I'm just grabbing my notes. The first order of business is the roll call. And recording secretary should note that we have all the commissioners except for Commissioner Vile, Commissioner Erstad, and Commissioner Bartholomew. Those three commissioners are absent. The rest are present, and Commissioner Beatty is participating via call-in phone. Ian, are you there?
I'm here.
Great. Okay. So with that, with the roll call, the next order of business is the director's report. Mr. Back, may we have your report, please?
Sure. As you know, today we have a hearing on Ordinance 858, the Omnibus Ordinance. August 21st, we'll have a hearing on the Accessory Dwelling Units, Ordinance 859. And on September 4th, we have a hearing on the Tektronix Development Agreement, which is Ordinance Number 860. So assuming you don't continue some of these ordinances into September, that'll be the end of the ordinances for this this season.
The Tektronix will be the end?
Correct.
September 4th, I'm trying to look at my calendar. What day, I'm just wondering if it can, what's the Labor Day conflict, if any?
Labor Day is Monday, so that'd be the second.
It'll be a day, 2 days after Labor Day.
Okay, let's pass the holiday, yep. You never know where it falls.
Right. So once the season is over, we intend to come to you monthly with briefings and updates of planning work that's going on once we get probably to that September meeting. We can have a tentative schedule of things.
Briefings on what?
Well, for example, we've been doing the significant natural resource work. We can talk about HB 2020-2001. Talk a little bit more about the draft work program, other transportation stuff going on. That would be our intent, but we would develop some sort of schedule for you when we get closer to actually doing those briefings.
And when will work start on the draft work program for next year?
Usually it starts late October. It's sort of a function of how many ordinances we have to wrap up and how busy October. Sometimes it's into November before we start that work. So just want to talk a little bit about what happened at the board yesterday. Ordinance 855, the technical code changes they adopted. They had the first hearing on 856, the telecommunication facilities ordinance, and they continued that to September 17th, allowing us being the department to work on the right-of-way standards that we've talked about. And something that didn't come to you, but you may want to be aware of, there was a change to our grading ordinance to require posting of development sites. That was something that came from the CCI previously, a request, but staff at least thought the best place to do that wasn't in the land use, the community development code, but the grading ordinance was really, that's the point where people who are sort of unaware of activity suddenly see ground being broke and machines showing up and activity. So the request was primarily to provide a contact. So the board did adopt that, and it goes in effect in 30 days. Okay. That's a really everything I have for right now.
On the telecommunications, it's been postponed to September until further review or information is gathered by the staff?
Yeah, we hope by that point we'll have at least a draft of the new proposed rules for right-of-way permits to handle these. And it also at least allow us more time to work on the issue of relocating cell towers when development activity occurs. So we're still doing some legal research on that.
The Commissioner Wellner, were you here for the telecommunications conversation? You were, okay. That's right,
you were. For our hearing.
Yeah, for our hearing. And my understanding is PGE entered into the conversation, is that correct?
Correct. They testified and are concerned about
being responsible for relocation
and how those rules may change.
And citing court cases and...
Yeah, the two folks to my left, I think their letter, they didn't provide a letter, but they did, they certainly showed up and, you know, had made their presence felt, I would say, so.
The saga continues on this. It's a tough issue. It's one reason I think we made the recommendation was to make no recommendation. Are there any questions for Mr. Back from other commissioners?
What happened regarding the discussion about putting things on county-owned assets? Was there any conversation about allowing or disallowing that?
That's still sort of up in the air in terms of, it's a two-part question. A, right now they're precluded in the community development code from being on county assets. So one question would, well, you can take it out of the code. That doesn't require us as the owner of those assets necessarily to doesn't force us into those agreements with folks, but it allows us to do that if we want to do it. But there really wasn't discussion about that, I would say, yesterday. So, but it's still kind of an open question, something that we know the industry is very interested in pursuing.
Did the telecommunications companies' representatives have anything to say about the relocation issue at all, or did they just come with the same aesthetics concerns?
So I think the messages we've heard from them in written testimony is fairly similar to what we heard at the PC meeting. And then their oral testimony was fairly limited in length and just kind of hit the high notes. And there are the same points to be made, but nothing new at this point.
I just for the planning commissions, I did submit a piece of correspondence to the record for the board hearing, and I clarified I was a planning commissioner, but that I was submitting on behalf of myself and just kind of outlined reiterated the concerns that I raised at the hearing.
Are those in the record?
Yes, they are. They were attached to the staff report for the board hearing, and that's probably something that we can make sure you folks have access to.
Well, if it's in the record, I mean, it was in the staff report, it's online for that ordinance. So I'm not sure everyone would want to see it. I probably will go look at it, but we can access it on the ordinance page. And it was included in the staff report, you're saying. Yeah. And I had a question about the about telecommunication for county council. So there, part of this is county council has to be involved in review of getting to September, the next step. I mean, in terms of what or I guess that's a question, will county council be involved in this?
Yes, not Jacqueline necessarily,
but
another attorney has been pretty heavily involved in certainly the issue of the use of the right-of-way and what we can and can't force utilities to do.
Right. It's a complicated issue.
There was some discussion about pursuing it legislatively, too, at the hearing, wasn't there?
Correct, a little bit, and certainly we have that information in the staff report about not having franchise fees and the ability to have them, so.
Any further questions for staff?
I have a quick question. So have all the tier one, or once we get through ordinance season, all the tier one topics, have those been dealt with for the year? Or will they have?
The work program goes essentially from when it's adopted till the time the next one is adopted,
okay.
So kind of March to March. So all of the ordinances that are included in the work program will have been addressed or started on. So there were a couple of additional housing topics that we got started on, but with House Bill 2001, we thought maybe we should wait and see how that plays out. So, but as far as most of the ordinances, those have finished.
But not everything in the work plan.
Not everything.
Tier one is an ordinance, I guess.
Right.
So, okay.
Right. So we had the significant natural resource assessment report, and we have an issue paper on short-term rentals, and both of those will be coming forward still. I think short-term rentals will be later on in the year. The significant natural resources will be late summer, we're expecting. So the kinds of things that were not ordinances we're still working on and will be bringing forward over the next six months or so.
The short-term rentals, that's not going to be an ordinance. What would that be, or how are we going to solve that problem?
So it's going to start with an issue paper, which is often what we do. We identify what is the problem, what are the issues, what are possible options to address it. It may or may not be an ordinance as a way to address it. It may not be a land use solution. It may be something else. So that's what we'll bring forward in the issue paper, and then we'll get direction on how to proceed if the board would want a land use ordinance or something else.
It would seem to me that that is something that faces so many people, and there's so many people in the county that are interested. Having some type of, whether it's an online open house or a physical open house someplace to get people, you know, I know you're busy, but I think that that's something that could attract a lot of people. And maybe in conjunction with the CPOs or, you know, something like that, where each of the CPOs has, you know, a short meeting where staff members that are dedicated to that topic can go to, or something like that. But
I would agree. And whether it's through the CPO system or initiating it at CCI or public hearing, public workshop, open house, whatever, because I think there is interest, both pro and con, because for every person who has a complaint about the property next door to them or across the street that's being operated, there's a person who is earning part of their living doing it and not disturbing their neighbors. And so in every jurisdiction that's tried to do this regulation, it's been sort of a difficult road to figure out what's the where on the, you know, the spectrum to do it. And then if you're going to do it, anything beyond just laissez-faire, then how is it going to be compliance? How's it going to be enforced? This is the problem Portland has faced. The auditor said that, yeah, you have this on the books, but it's not being enforced because there's no resources to do it. Commissioner Wellner had a question, too.
Question about the grading permit posting. Is that for all grading activities or just those that haven't already had to post for a public process, like a neighborhood meeting and where public notice was sent out?
It would be anything that needs a grading permit. So
when I go in and pull my grading permit from Kim, do I get like a little colored sheet or?
No, you have to create your own sign.
So I just create a sign, hammer it in the ground, and it sets out there while the grading activities are occurring.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you.
Commissioner Lockwood.
I was wanting to ask about the significant natural resources issue paper. You said that issue papers are prompted by certain issues arising, what prompted that paper?
I'll talk initially, then let Teresa jump in. So there have been a few LUBA appeals on properties that have significant natural resource designations on them, where development has occurred and surrounding neighbors have not been very happy with the outcome because they had expectations that may have been different than what the code implies happens on those sites because there's this designation. And so at a minimum, there seems to be a need to clarify the language and what things mean. And then it's a very slippery slope because once you start getting into the issue, it kind of opens up a much broader issue about significant natural resources in the county, specifically in the urban area, and what we've done historically and what the intent of those designations was. So it was prompted as a result of those appeals where the folks who got involved realized that this may be a legislative issue, so they asked the board as part of the work program to do this work. They were, I think, probably more aggressive than what we ended up doing. They wanted an ordinance this season, and we recommended it's a big issue that we think requires an issue paper first and then let the board and the community members understand the issue perhaps more comprehensively, and then based on that get direction on what to do. So I'll let Teresa jump in at this point.
Well, it actually has morphed from an issue paper to what we're calling an assessment report. So it's going to be quite big and pretty comprehensive. It's probably more than 50 pages now. So I think that's where it came from. And then there were things that kind of got added on. So we also got a LUBA opinion that said that some of our standards weren't clear and objective, so we needed to look at that. We also got requests through the work program, both from neighborhood folks and from the city of Beaverton, and in the past, actually, Hillsborough has also asked us to look at our tree protection regulations and how does that relate to the significant natural resource protections. So we're kind of comprehensively trying to look at the whole thing. And that's why it's taken a little bit longer than we had originally intended.
Thank you. So I understand every case has its specific particular circumstances, but on these LUBA appeals, did the disgruntled neighbors prevail or not?
It was remanded, wasn't it?
And to recall, it was remanded, and then on the one case, the applicant applied again and addressed the situation in a pretty similar way, but used different language and did slightly different things. I forget the status of that one, whether it got appealed again or not.
If you're talking about Warren, I have the latest status. Yeah.
So there you go.
All right. So in this particular case, we had the applicant And at the hearing, I wasn't at the hearing, but I understand at the hearings officer did not apply certain portions of the development code that the hearings officer felt was not clear and objective. And this was a position that was argued by the developer. So that point, once the hearings officer decided not to apply those parts of the code that he felt were subjective, the neighbors took that to LUBA. And then at LUBA, LUBA agreed that those portions of the code were not clear and objective, and so therefore LUBA affirmed the hearings officer's decision. So then the neighbors took that to the Court of Appeals, and the Court of Appeals agreed with LUBA. So so it went back down on a remand. Excuse me, it did not go back down on remand. What happened was, I'm sorry, this is like at least six or seven procedural parts, so I'm sorry. Let me back up. So the hearings officer did not apply the portions that he felt were subjective. That went up to LUBA. And there was a technicality at LUBA, and when they talked about what was buildable land, there we go. And so the parties had not sort of developed the argument related to buildable land, and so it was remanded by LUBA with instructions for the hearings officer to take a look at what buildable land was. So at that point, the applicant decided not to follow up with the remand, and instead they put in another application. And this new application was virtually identical. But in this case, the applicant's attorney really argued the part of the argument that says that the legislature took out buildable lands in the legislation, so we don't even need to look at the definition of buildable lands. It's if you're in the UGB, anything that is not clear and objective is out. So that went to LUBA, and LUBA agreed that that if it is not clear and objective, then you cannot apply those provisions of the code. Basically, the legislature has spoken, and the legislature has said buildable lands does not include those parts of the code that protect significant natural resources. So that went up to the Court of Appeals. Court of Appeals agreed with LUBA. Then the neighbors took that to the Supreme Court, and so the latest is the Supreme Court has denied review. So we did get a letter from the neighbor's attorney saying that they are going to go to, I believe, LCDC for an order, and they're going to do this unless the county, like, immediately puts in clear and objective standards in its code. And in the meantime, until we've developed the clear and objective standards, we have to have a moratorium on all development applications that have significant natural resources on them.
Thank you. I just found that all of this might be context for one of the things we're talking about today. Even though the item today, I believe, is outside the UGB, so it's a different, that may be different. Anyway, we'll go.
Wouldn't a moratorium require someone to file for an injunction?
Frankly, I don't think anyone's ever seen a letter like this. So there's going to, this is something that we're going to have to take a look at. So for a moratorium, I think what the property owner is asking the county to do is the county itself not process any more applications. Now, if there was an injunction, the county would not enjoin itself. So if you're talking about an injunction, that would be those neighbors would have to pay an attorney to file an injunction.
That's what I mean, the neighbors.
Right. So if injunction is where they're going, then that's what they would have to do. But I think they're asking for us to do it voluntarily.
Okay. If there are no further questions, what? Move on to the next item on the agenda, which is the oral communications, which is the time for a member of the public to speak or comment on an item that is not on the agenda. And seeing that there is no one signed up nor anyone physically present, we will skip that part of the, well, that there is no one. So then we'll enter into the next order, which will be the public hearings, staff report and public hearings, the ordinance 858, an ordinance amending the CDC relating to, it's an omnibus ordinance relating to city-county coordination, Scoggins Dam, and special use quarries. And so without further ado, if we could have the staff report.
Good afternoon. I'm Karina Rindes, Associate Planner from Community Planning, and I'm here to present the staff report for this omnibus ordinance that will amend the Community Development Code. This omnibus ordinance addresses changes to the comprehensive plan that are more meaningful or substantive than housekeeping, but not so substantial or lengthy as to justify individual ordinances. All of the changes proposed in this year's omnibus ordinance will amend the Community Development Code. I'll provide some context on each of these three topics, which include changes to implement city-county coordination and modifications to development standards for the improvement or expansion of the Scoggins Dam, Henry Hagg Lake facility, and special use quarries. And then I'll discuss the actual changes proposed by the ordinance.
Before you do, just for clarification, I think I've asked this before, but omnibus and housekeeping, and I think there's one other. I mean, is there a material difference between these? I mean, what qualifies as an omnibus versus a housekeeping? Or
so housekeeping are often things like incorrect references in the Community Development Code or that sort of thing that are not substantive at all. They're really just tidying up things in the code typically. We did have a technical code changes ordinance this year, which was focused on relatively minor changes to the code that had been raised by current planning staff as they implemented the code. And so that one was brought forward separately from omnibus, which were three requests actually that we got from external parties during the work program. So the omnibus are things that are substantive, but maybe if they were individual ordinances, we might not be able to get to them because they didn't necessarily rise to the level of needing their own ordinances.
Got it.
So there are some overlapping, but somewhat different.
TSP changes that are minor amendments, where do those fall if there were a bunch of them? I mean, well, if there were just a couple of them that didn't require a TSP minor amendment ordinance, would they fall into what? Which category?
They could fall into either the technical code changes or this omnibus, depending. I mean, typically there have been enough things changing that the transportation planning section has kind of bundled them together as a TSP, almost like a TSP omnibus ordinance.
This is just for edification for other people as well, but so last year, I think it was last August, we had the TSP changes, which was, I believe, a housekeeping, or was it not? The one that Chair Vial, I think, wanted to amend to include
a broader... It was somewhere between housekeeping and an omnibus ordinance.
Okay. I just want to keep the perspective on that. Okay, so I'm sorry, if you could please continue. Thank you for that clarification.
So the first area of change proposed in this ordinance relates to city-county coordination. And to understand this, you have to understand just a little bit about urban planning area agreements, which are one of several tools the county uses to coordinate comprehensive plans or comprehensive planning in unincorporated areas of the county. And in particular, last year's update to the Washington County Beaverton UPAA identified a need for greater coordination in certain areas. And these areas are adjacent to city boundaries, and we're going to show a map here on the next slide. And the parties all agreed that we need a process to ensure that there's more early coordination ahead of development applications to ensure that applicants receive timely and relevant information related to the provision of services, annexation availability, and applicable development regulations. And that's both county regulations as well as city regulations. And so here you can see the Beaverton planning area outlined in blue. The development coordination area is shown in yellow, and it includes all the land within a quarter mile of the city of Beaverton boundary within unincorporated Washington County, plus a little bit more. And these were areas identified by the city primarily that the county agreed upon. So the process that the county staff and the city agreed on is similar to how we work with clean water services for sensitive areas. So when an applicant has a pre-application conference with the county, county staff identifies whether the site is within the city coordination area. And if so, the applicant is provided a form that they then take to the city, and the applicant consults with the city, finds out about the provision of services. The city completes that development coordination form and gives it back to the applicant. The applicant then submits that form in their land use application to the county, and it includes things about whether or not annexation is needed to get those possible services that are needed. So to codify...
Is there anything that would... So if you don't need a city service, is there anything in this that would prohibit you from developing in the county?
Okay. Nope. Nope, it's just a submittal requirement to make sure everybody's on the same page.
Okay, thank you.
So to codify this process, we have added a submittal requirement. And again, it applies to that land within a city coordination area. And we're not calling this the Beaverton coordination area because it's possible other cities in the future will want to use this similar process.
Wouldn't it require it be in their UPAA?
Correct. Okay. Yes. And in particular, the Beaverton UPAA has specific language that it's a little bit more narrower than the way the ordinance was originally drafted, which has kind of a broad application to all development applications. So we have already proposed that might be a good idea to engross that, to limit the use of these forms when a development application is subject to notice requirements, and also proposes to add new lots or structures. So the second area for the omnibus ordinance relates to the Tualatin Basin Dam Safety and Water Supply Joint Project, also referred to as the Tualatin Joint Project for short. And this project will make seismic and water supply improvements to Scoggins Dam that will alter and expand Henry Hagg Lake. So shown here is the big blue splotch that is Henry Hagg Lake. There's a red outline that shows kind of the general area of which the project partners are looking at. And this area is located in the western portion of Washington County.
Where is Barney Reserve?
Barney Reservoir is located to the south and even farther west. It's actually the portion of that reservoir, the southern portion's in Yamhill County. This is a little bit closer in, but still very much in our rural area. And the existing facility was constructed between 1972 and 74 and was established before zoning was applied to that part of the county. It's located in the exclusive Forest and Conservation District, which has very limited provisions for public utilities. One alternative under consideration by the project partners includes a downstream dam. This option would impact additional area within the rural industrial, AF5 agricultural and forestry, and EFU land use districts. However, all these additional downstream land use districts have existing allowances for public utilities or public facilities that would accommodate the project, while the EFC district does not. Also of consideration is the fact that the lake and nearby streams are designated both water areas and wetlands and fish and wildlife habitat, and that's shown there in the blue. And then the general area is also designated wildlife habitat around the project. Specifically, the water areas and wetlands and fish and wildlife habitat currently allows only limited utility uses, such as utility lines and the expansion of the Barney Reservoir. So the ordinance proposes to amend the CDC in a similar fashion to how changes were made to accommodate the Barney Reservoir Dam. And so there are existing allowances in both the EFC district and in the special use standards for significant natural resources that identify Barney Reservoir by name. And so the approach here was just to add Scoggins Dam and in the Henry Hagg Lake facility to those existing provisions. The third area included in the omnibus ordinance is relates to special use quarries. And these are smaller quarries that are subject to the county's special use standards. These standards were added to the CDC in 2017 as part of the county's efforts to increase local supply of aggregate and mineral materials that are used for road-related projects. The ordinance proposes changes to clarify the interactions between the quarry standards and the standards for significant natural resources relating to setbacks, haul route access maps, and mitigation of impacts. So the existing standards, talking about setbacks, uses general terms, and what we propose to do here is specify the setback is related to, you know, not one or more of the significant natural resources, but specifically to water-related areas, which are designated as water areas and wetlands, or water areas and wetlands and fish and wildlife habitat. In regards to the haul route access map, the existing standards require applicants to show the location of all SNRs within 250 feet of the route. And there was some question as, could this be interpreted to mean this requires field verification by a specialized professional? And that was not the intent of the ordinance. So the proposed standard clarifies that this means showing the SNRs as identified on the rural natural resources map. And then the existing standards for special use quarries also reference sensitive fish and wildlife habitat, as well as significant adverse impact. Neither of these terms are defined in the CDC, and we don't have regulations specific to these terms. So the proposed standard uses the terms that are defined in the special use section for the significant natural resources and proposes to use those same considerations. So we no longer have to have applicants or staff reinventing the wheel. We're using our existing regulated terms for the same purposes. So today, staff's recommendation is that we conduct the public hearing and that the Planning Commission recommend approval of the ordinance to the board with engrossment related to the city coordination area requirements as described in the staff report. And with that, I'd be happy to take any questions you might have.
Questions? Not seeing any. I have a couple. Let me just see. So Beaverton is the only one with these designated areas. Is that correct? Hillsborough doesn't have them, the coordination areas.
They have not determined a coordination area at this time, and it's not in the most recent UPAA. Okay, let Teresa clarify that.
So the Hillsborough UPAA did have a provision for additional coordination, but a specific area hasn't been determined at this point. So they're the one at this point where we'll be starting some talks with them about the possible area and could apply this. We know at least one more city is interested in this kind of thing, but as you mentioned, it would need to be included in the UPAA and have been talked about by the board and agreed to before it would happen.
Was the coordination areas one of the reasons for the delay in the Beaverton UPAA being adopted, or there was a period where it was being kicked down the road constantly?
It was part of the discussion. Probably the bigger delay was agreement on the extent of the area that should be within their urban planning area. So the questions about North Bethany and Bonnie Slope
right.
were probably okay. the bigger stumbling blocks.
I have a question on the additional items that aren't addressed, just as for reference or information. The item A, which is the tiny homes accommodation in the Oregon Code. So the 2018 administrative changes were made by the state, but were superseded by which 2019 legislative changes?
Oh, there was a total of three bills, I believe, that resulted from the legislature. And I do not recall the names of those off the top of my head. So one of the bills says that instead of the rules that the Building Codes Division came up with for tiny houses, what you'll actually do is all jurisdictions, you're going to adopt the International Building Code standards for tiny homes, and we're going to make it consistent. And it's not going to include anything built on a chassis, which is what the rule change had included. So then there's additional bills that then clarify if you're built on a chassis, what rules apply.
Okay. And on item B, the update of the plan documents to implement the 2018 What was the 2018, you mean just the recent Metro decision?
That's correct, yes.
And C, the solar farm reference refers to the work program, the changes being included potentially in the 2020-21 work program. Why not, I mean, why a year, 2 years out?
So the...
versus the next work program.
Yeah.
But that is the next.
That is the next one. Oh, okay, okay.
We're 18, 19.
Gotcha.
We're 19, 20 now.
We are, okay. Yes.
So the next one is 2021.
Great, that answers the question then. Any follow-up questions? Sure, Mr. Commissioner Waller.
And this comes from my paranoia, but what if a city decided they didn't want to coordinate and I could demonstrate that I had services, they just wouldn't give me my form because they really wanted me to annex.
So, I mean, what the city's obligation is to fill out the form to demonstrate that you went there and you talked to them. They can put anything they want on the form. In fact, they can say annexation is required, and the applicant can submit additional information in their application that maybe demonstrates a different take on that. And then which case it would be a matter of sorting out the facts, I think.
What if they just choose not to?
I might chime in. I mean, I think we've faced that right now with any service provider. If they got ornery and just didn't want to give you a letter.
Well, if I could interject, when we were discussing this, or when it staff was talking about this. I was going to ask you to comment. I think rather than in the form of a question, I think it'd be good just to state what the concerns are. One is how would it be enforced if there wasn't an agreement by the UPAA jurisdiction, right? That's
well. I think it's a. I mean, it, from what Andy was going to just say, I think if Clean Water didn't want to provide me with an SPL, then I don't have something demonstrating that I have essential services. In this circumstance, in that circumstance, CWS is motivated to have me develop because then I'm paying SDCs and adding more ratepayers to their district. In this circumstance, the city of Beaverton really wants people to annex if they're developing adjacent because those people are going to be using their services more likely than not. Or at least some of them. And so I guess if they wanted to play hardball, they could by if this forces me to have that form. And more as we get closer to developing stuff near the city that has 45 Central was a perfect example. We could have developed 45 Central in Washington County. We chose to go to the city, but the city would have really wanted to force us to go to the city if they could. Given the size and scale of the project. So what prohibits them from just saying, no, we want you to annex, we don't want to give you the form, deal with it? That would be my concern.
You know, we're trusting they're going to work in good faith and have the conversation, and when you say, I don't want to annex, they'll still give us the form, but they may not, and then we would have to have a dilemma of you saying, here's what we did. They didn't give us a form. And I would think we would still probably say, okay, sign something that you did that, and we'd process your application, and they would be in a position to appeal the application. You know, it could play out in a number of horrible ways, I think. We're kind of hoping this works out. But if we have to change language, we'll change language down the road.
I think it will work out, and I'm not necessarily opposed to it, but it's definitely a...
No, I think that's why I wanted you to comment, because I think this, you know, when we use the term gray area, it's usually because there's an unintentional overlap or unknowing about something or confusion or conflict. Here we're creating a gray area, and there are potentially a lot of what ifs, and the gray areas are clearly parcels that are hot for development because they're the next ring out, and so it may require further. But I think it's good. I think it's helpful that the county has worked with the city, because the city's aggressive about wanting to do its, as it annexes, that things be in line with what they would expect. And so this is a good first step. My hunch is that there probably will be something eventually, and it will need to be straightened out. But I think this is a good first step. So are there any other questions on the ordinance? Commissioner Lockwood.
My question is around Section C, the special use quarries. I may have paranoia as well. I'm still not quite understanding the issue that this applicant has. Are there significant natural resources as identified on the rural natural resource plan that are part of this proposed quarry? And is that why there's an issue?
So if I may take you back to this map here. No, I know. But do you see how much green there is?
Sure.
On that map? It's like that all over in the western and eastern part of the county, especially in the kind of northern foothills area just north of Highway 26. And if we had to require people to be set back from every single significant natural resource in the EFC district, which is the forest district, which has lots of trees, which is mostly wildlife habitat, we'd never be able to get a quarry at all in that area.
Which is kind of what I presumed, that there is a significant natural resource there, but it's not mapped. Is that right? Or it is? I mean, your change to the ordinance says it should be a mapped
resource. So when it comes to the haul route?
Right, yeah. The intent of this access standard is to show the relationship between mapped resources and the haul route.
Yes.
And you're saying the entire area is mapped as a significant natural resource?
Many times, yes. And so trying to delineate that, find the edge of that, that edge is likely way more than 250 feet away from the route.
Okay. And I have one other more general question. Approaching this specific topic on the eve of a report coming out makes me uncomfortable. Do you want to comment on that?
Well, I think you did mention if there was a difference between the urban and the rural area, and I guess we do see that there is, and the assessment report is really focused on the urban area.
Okay.
And how that, mm-hmm. how it works there and with development projects and that sort of thing.
Okay, so the mapping of significant natural areas within the urban area is far more restrictive. I mean, it affects surrounding development far more. Is that correct?
I don't know if I would put it exactly like that. I think that the kinds of land that was designated as significant in the urban area differs from the kind of land that was designated as significant in the rural area. And in the rural area, it was much more extensive and included things kind of away from riparian resources.
Okay. So the protection that will be in the ordinance is around riparian areas, not?
So it depends on which portion of the the ordinance you're talking about. What we've proposed for the setback, so right now it just uses general terms and talks about significant natural resources. It doesn't specify which ones, and so we've clarified that it's really specific to those riparian related areas. And this is a more restrictive standard, and it does not, it works in conjunction with the other standards in the special use standards for significant natural resources.
Okay.
And I believe the intention is to provide enough clarity so that there isn't a dispute or a suit that says it wasn't clear, therefore, and then the LUBA or court says the county needed to be more specific. And is that correct? You're trying to preempt those type of problems.
Well, that would certainly be helpful. Result. But I would say that there is an application that, you know, the county would like to see move forward, the applicant would like to see move forward.
That's the intent.
And some of this kind of lack of clarity in these kind of brand new standards,
right,
that if we could tweak them, we think things could move forward and there would be a lot less opportunity for that kind of thing to happen. And it would
because the
give
applicant said they were confused as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Are we have any more questions?
Just one more.
Sure.
So the standards proposed are, well, in the existing quarry ordinance, you say are more general than those in Section 422. So
yeah,
it's coming more in line with the other portion of the code. Is that right?
I would agree with that, yes. And that is certainly the intent here, is to kind of tighten things up so that they are more of a closer to being an exact match.
Okay.
Any other questions before they're opening the public hearing? Not seeing any.
Hey, sir, this is Ian.
Oh, I'm sorry, Commissioner Beatty. I had it written down here to ask you.
going back to the additional work, A, on the tiny houses, does anybody know regarding the 2019 legislative changes terms of density for tiny houses?
That's a good question that I'm not sure that we know the answer to, but it's construction rules, building codes for dwellings that are 400 square feet or less. And I could see that, depending on the context, being a primary dwelling as well as maybe being an accessory dwelling in the urban area. And ADUs don't count for density right now.
The reason I ask is I've seen a couple tiny homes in the Beaverton and Loa area pop up in residential neighborhoods that have open fields or square footage. And so, what would stop a developer or business owner to go and throw a whole bunch of tiny homes, super dense concentrated area on a lot, and start charging rent that way as a quote primary resident, or even like a Airbnb VRBO type situation in a tiny home?
So anybody who wants to develop, including putting tiny homes on their lot, should be coming in and submitting an application. Somebody who's, trucking in a bunch of these and putting them up overnight, I'm not sure if they've come in and talked to us. That might be an enforcement issue.
Right, and that's why I was asking you if there's anything in the legislative change that specified the surrounding that, or if the county needs to get ahead of it and make any kind of ordinance changes that are applicable.
So I think there are a number of aspects to your question. I know that there was a bill this year about transitional housing, and that talked more about, I think, tents and that sort of thing. And we haven't had a chance to assess that and implications. So we will be looking more closely now that the legislative session is over at all of the bills and possible implications for us. But that would be the one that I would think maybe tiny houses could fit into that one somehow. But if a tiny house is not on wheels, then it's considered a dwelling unit, and you would have to meet density requirements of whatever district you were in. So a tiny house would equal any other kind of house. If the tiny house is on wheels, then it's more considered like a recreational vehicle, and then you're into a camping kind of thing or a RV park kind of thing, and there are limitations on where those are allowed.
Right, and yeah. I could see that overlap of camping versus dwelling versus short, you know, it kind of goes into a lot of categories.
Yeah, so we'll be looking more closely, like I said, at the legislation, all of the pieces of legislation. There were a lot that passed this year, and not only will we come back on House Bill 2001, but I think there'll be a number of things that we may need to change in our code in the next couple of years. So through our work program, we'll be bringing some of those through as well.
Okay, that's all I had. Thank you.
As housing, residential housing modalities change, I guess, this is part of the process you go through. Commissioner Beatty, I think, though, maybe staff can confirm, you know, in general, the state doesn't, it delegates density to the local zoning or the jurisdictions. I assume, though, there's like metro requirements for minimum density. So if someone were to place tiny houses on a large lot, they may not meet minimum density requirements, correct? If there weren't enough coverage.
Well, there isn't a lot coverage requirement. In my mind, if you put a tiny home on a single large lot, you're maybe missing out on some opportunity. It might be better to think about redeveloping that large lot into a smaller lot.
But you're saying
you could only do that if you meet
minimum. You're saying it wouldn't necessarily be prohibited to have a tiny house on a 2-acre site in city of Tigard, urbanized Washington County, for instance, there isn't a minimum density requirement for that if you were just to permit one tiny house on a 2-acre lot?
Well, so it might depend on which district you're in. Some of our districts do say that you...
But like an R5 or a 7 or something?
Yeah, so if you're going to do that in some of those lower density districts, then you have to go through a process where you prepare... a future development plan, or what they often call a shadow plat,
right,
so that you can show that wherever you're putting this tiny house won't be like in the middle of a future property line. And so you won't preclude future land use divisions.
And so then in general, it's really not the state setting density or addressing density in state statute. It's the local jurisdictions dealing with that. So. Any other questions? If not, we'll go ahead and open the public hearing. We're opening the public hearing on ordinance number 858, an omnibus ordinance amending the development code related to coordination, development standards with Hag Lake and special use quarries. Just verify there's nobody signed up and there's nobody in the audience. And without anyone indicating they want to testify, I shall close the public hearing with no public testimony being submitted. in person. And at this time, would consider a motion for recommendation of Ordinance 858 to the Board of Commissioners with engrossments, as stated, relating to the city coordination area requirements as described in the staff report, or an alternate motion. Is there?
I'll move to recommend approval of Ordinance 858 with engrossments to the Board of Commissioners.
Second.
Yes. Second.
Commissioner Wellner has moved the ordinance for recommendation, and Commissioner Mills has seconded. And all in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Aye.
Thank you, Commissioner Beatty. Aye as well. Without any opposition, it passes with a recommendation to the County Commission, the Board of Commissioners. That concludes the ordinance issue. The other issue is the consideration of the minutes from June 19th. Are there any corrections to the minutes?
No, but I wasn't here, so I'm wondering if if you abstain, do we have enough to?
Yes, we do.
Vote to approve. Okay, I will abstain.
We still have five.
Perfect.
If Commissioner Beatty was present.
I will abstain as well. I was not present.
This has come up in other organizations before.
Yeah, I was curious. Can you vote if you weren't there?
As long as you have a quorum and the people voting positive against negative, it still passes. You don't need a majority of the people.
So we still maintain quorum if two of us abstain, because it's an abstention vote, but it's not like a no, we shouldn't pass it vote. So it's neutral, basically. So it's in favor, kind of. Maybe?
I move.
I don't know.
We,
it's council.
Well, before we state, I think County Council wanted to mention something. No.
I would say if you really want something technical, I do have the Roberts Rules of Order here if you want me to look that up. But I would also point out that in the Planning Commission rules that if you go kind of outside and it turns out that that was a technical breach of the rules, as long as nobody is hurt by it, it's okay.
And I should also say that rules of procedure for the Planning Commission address this and say that people who weren't present could vote. I've always been confounded about why we have this exercise, but I thought it sort of created an allowance. Let's just have Jackie take a quick look to see if my recollection is correct. I don't have my rules of procedures. I should have them with me.
Do you want to take a break while I take a look?
Yes, if you could, because I think I'm going to use the restroom. Yeah, sure. 5-minute recess. We had some clarification. The rules of procedure say that person can vote on the minutes. That's our interpretation. If they had previously reviewed the meeting in writing or in, listening to audio, that would be one way you could. Otherwise, they would abstain, so you would abstain. And as long as we have a quorum that we began with and the majority of the people present vote affirmatively for the minutes, and then four people voting for a six-person attendance would be enough to pass it. So that's just clarification. So again, Commissioner Mills.
I was going to move that we approve the minutes of June 19, 2019 as written.
Seconded by Commissioner Lockwood. Is there any objection? If not, We will consider the minutes adopted. I'm sorry, because we do have abstentions. Commissioner Mills is abstaining?
No, I'm...
I'm sorry, Beatty, excuse me. Yeah, Commissioner Beatty's abstaining, yes.
In the affirmative.
And Commissioner Enloe is abstaining because they were not present. That leaves leaves Commissioner Wellner, Petrillo, Lockwood, and Mills voting in favor, which is enough to adopt or approve adoption of the minutes. Thank you for that. Allowing me to clarify that. If there's no other business, we'll consider, or no objection, I'll consider the meeting adjourned at 2:44 p.m. Thank you.